Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2015 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak's CEO, Alberto Sada, CFO, and Maximilian Zimmermann, Investor Relations, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's Investor Relations website. I will now turn the call over to Maximilian Zimmermann.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our fourth quarter and full year financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Max. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2015 results conference call. We closed 2015 on a positive note, delivering solid profitability on the back of an improved sales mix, operational efficiencies, and increased volumes. Furthermore, we took important steps to lay the groundwork for future growth. This included winning new contracts to produce powertrain components, our core business, and the structural components, our new business line, as well as continuing to make strategic investments to enhance our manufacturing and R&D capabilities. Our business performance in North America and Europe, our largest markets, drove our results. During the quarter, we recorded a 9% volume increase supported by gains in all our regions. In terms of revenues, we posted a 3% decrease compared to the same period last year, mainly due to the depreciation of the euro and lower aluminum prices. Meanwhile, EBITDA increased by 4%, mainly driven by higher profitability in our European operations. Excluding the foreign exchange effect, revenues and EBITDA increased 2% and 8% year-on-year, respectively. I would also like to highlight some improvements to our balance sheet. We recently refinanced $500 million through a syndicated loan and other bilateral credit facilities. Utilizing the proceeds from these transactions, Nemak repaid its outstanding Certificados Bursátiles and also improved the maturity of some short-term debt. Additionally, as you may have read, this past November, the rating agency Fitch raised our credit rating to BB+ from BB. With this upgrade, the three main rating agencies, S&P, Moody's, and Fitch, have us rated one notch below investment grade, a reflection of our strong credit metrics, solid profitability, cash flow generation, and leading industry position. I would now like to move on to the commercial side of the business. During 2015, we were awarded new contracts with global customers worth a total of approximately $1.2 billion in annual revenues, close to half of which represented incremental programs. This included $200 million worth of new contracts in the fourth quarter alone. As we look to build further upon our track record, we will continue to focus on leveraging our technological capabilities to grow our business. With automakers increasingly turning to aluminum as a lever for making their vehicles lighter and therefore more fuel efficient, we are seeing that our expertise in aluminum casting engineering, including materials, processes, design, and simulation, is enabling us to serve as a strategic partner to them in the development of new vehicle platforms. Moreover, as engines in new light vehicles become more sophisticated, we are seeing that demand for automotive components requiring advanced and therefore higher value-added castings is continuing to increase. In particular, this trend is supporting attractive growth opportunities for us in our cylinder heads, engine blocks, and complex automatic transmission product lines. We have built our R&D portfolio with our customers' needs top of mind, focusing on technological innovation that help us to meet and exceed their quality, performance, emissions, and fuel economy targets in ways that are cost-effective. With six strategically located product development centers around the world, we are well positioned to provide our customers with integrated solutions. In addition to further enhancing our core powertrain portfolio, we are making significant investments in CapEx and R&D to support the growth of our new structural component business. In 2015, we continued to advance our structural component strategy by improving our technological base in our new product development center in Poland and building a dedicated engineering team in Germany and Mexico. To date, we have booked contracts to produce structural components worth a total of $200 million in annual revenues, including a recently awarded new program for $60 million a year for a premium European OEM. At the same time, as part of our vertical integration strategy, we have continued to make significant investments to expand our in-house machining capacity across all our regions. These investments, in turn, have enabled us to deliver quality improvements to our customers while reducing our costs and increasing our margins. In 2015, we increased to 40% in-house machining and moving towards our goal of reaching 70% by the end of the decade. Lastly, in a fitting reminder of what we have accomplished in 2015, I am pleased to share that effective January 11th, NIMAC joined the Mexican Stock Exchange's IPC Index. The IPC is comprised of the 35 highest-ranked publicly traded companies in Mexico in terms of market capitalization and trading volume. I will now hand off the call to Alberto Sada, NIMAC's CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. Let me start by sharing relevant industry data that sheds light on our results. During the quarter, the seasonally adjusted annual rate for vehicle sales in the U.S. was up 7% from the fourth quarter of last year due to favorable credit conditions, low unemployment, low gasoline prices, and sales incentives. Meanwhile, in North America, vehicle production and NIMAC customers' vehicle production were both up 2%. The growth difference between sales and production came from a strong sales quarter driven by seasonal incentives, which in turn resulted in a decline of inventories to an average of 60-day supply. In Europe, the seasonally adjusted annual rate in the quarter was up 3% compared to the same quarter of last year, driven by Western Europe's recovery, which more than compensated for lower sales in Russia. Vehicle production increased 2%, and NIMAC's customers' production increased 4%, driven by increases in market share and exports from several NIMAC customers, including Renault, Daimler, and BMW. Now, let me move on to discuss our results. Volume in the quarter was 12.4 million equivalent units, a 9% increase from the same quarter of last year, mainly due to higher volumes in all our regions. I will now turn to our financials. Revenues were $1 billion, 3% below the same quarter of last year due to the effect of the depreciation of the euro compared to the U.S. dollar and the lower aluminum prices. As you may be aware, 30% of our revenues are generated in euros. This impacted our top line by approximately $46 million. On a currency-neutral basis, consolidated revenues increased 2% in the quarter. In terms of aluminum pricing, we had a negative revenue effect of approximately $70 million in the quarter due to an 18% decrease in average aluminum prices. It is important to highlight that we have a pass-through of aluminum prices in all our contracts with our customers. Gross profit increased 1% to $152 million. Several factors helped us increase our gross profit in the quarter, the most important ones being volume and improved sales mix, which more than offset the euro translation effect. In addition to mix, we continue to improve our operating efficiencies across our regions. Now, let me move on to our bottom line. Income from operation was $88 million, a 5% increase from the same quarter of 2014. Mainly due to the increase in gross profits, which I just mentioned.
EBITDA for the period was $165 million, a 4% increase compared to the fourth quarter of last year. This increase was due to higher income from operations. EBITDA per equivalent unit decreased 5% on the same period to $13.3 per unit due to seasonal effects in North America that I will explain shortly. Net income increased 3% compared to the fourth quarter of last year to $61 million in the period. This was driven by higher income from operations combined with lower financing expenses. In terms of our balance sheet, as of the end of September, we had a net debt position. As of the end of December, we had a net debt position of $1.2 billion, $90 million lower than the December of last year. Cash and cash equivalents were $123 million. Now, allow me to give you some details on our regional results. Our volumes in North America increased 6%. Meanwhile, revenues decreased 6%, mainly due to a lower aluminum prices. As indicated before, aluminum prices are a pass-through under the contracts we have with our customers. In terms of EBITDA, North America decreased 6% compared to 4Q14, mainly driven by two factors. First, a reduction in inventories that increased the fixed cost allocation in 4Q15, and second, higher maintenance costs in 15. In addition, 4Q14 results were benefit for the opposite effect of inventory increases and a retroactive commercial adjustment that took place in the quarter, making it a tough comparable. Moving on, we are very pleased with the financial results achieved in Europe. Volume increased 16%, surpassing our customers' production volume. Despite the 12% devaluation of the euro, revenues and EBITDA increased 1% and 15% respectively, compared to the same quarter of last year. On a currency-neutral basis, revenue and EBITDA increased 14% and 31% respectively. In our rest of the world operations, our volume increased by 10%, mainly driven by launching of new programs in Asia. Revenues decreased mainly to the depreciation of local currencies. EBITDA increased to $7 million for the quarter due to the new product launches in Asia. I will now return the call to Armando Tamez, NIMAX CEO.
Thank you, Alberto. On a final note, I would like to touch on our outlook for 2016. We expect to continue delivering good operational growth in all our regions. At the same time, I would like to emphasize that we see 2016 as a transition year, marked by investments to support new programs starting in 2017 and 2018. For 2016, we expect revenues of $4.5 billion, EBITDA of $777 million, and CapEx of $495 million. And with that, I would like to open the call for your questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question is from Patrick Archambault of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. So just wanted to follow up on the guidance. I think, you know, the 777, if I'm not mistaken, that was a little bit lower than what was being discussed, you know, around the IPO time, which I feel was like maybe closer to 800. So what on the margin has changed? Understanding, of course, that there's a lot of uncertainty out there in terms of volumes and things like that, but maybe that would be a good place to start the conversation.
Yeah, Patrick, I think that's a fair question. One of the things that has changed to us is the, as you are mentioning, some uncertainty in different markets, and we are seeing, again, lower volumes than originally anticipated in several markets. The first one, of course, is China, with all this uncertainty, is decreasing, as well as also we have higher expectations, according to some industry analysts, for the U.S. Market and also Europe. And in spite of the fact that South America is not making a big impact in our operations, it is also
a market that has a lower volume than originally anticipated. So in a short answer, I would say that the main change that we are seeing today is volumes. The previous volume that we had on a global basis was 54 million units. Now we are projecting sales of approximately 52 million equivalent units for this year.
And does that just, if I can build on that a little bit, is that a function of overall macro assumptions like IHS production being lower, or is there, you know, kind of a take rate consideration there as well?
No, basically we're basing our assumptions on external consultants. One important one that we are considering is IHS, as you are mentioning. And certainly they are projecting lower numbers than originally anticipated.
And then, like, maybe then just like delving into China. I think the one thing that might surprise us a little bit is the market has obviously done well over the last couple of quarters. And it's based on that purchase tax cut, right, which is obviously driving up demand. Is there kind of a mix issue? Is there something about the fact that demand in vehicles with under 1.6 liters is increasing and there's a mix issue? Is that part of the issue? Because it seems at a high level, the market itself is doing okay.
Yeah. No, that's a very valid point. Certainly China is growing at a slower pace than they have been growing over the last few years, as you are aware. And your point is also very well taken. Certainly, the Chinese government imposed a new regulation for government officials' cars that they only allowed to purchase vehicles below 1.6 liters. So that is also having some effect, and they are benefiting from the local brands rather than the foreign brands.
Okay, got it. Well, I'll pass it on. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Juan Tavares of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. Just my first question was regarding your margin in North America. If you can help us understand a little bit better that trend in cost this quarter. I know you mentioned inventory cost allocation and some maintenance. But can you give us some details there specifically on how much will be recurring into the first quarter? And then second, if you can just discuss a little bit more big picture, what you're seeing in structural component negotiations going forward with, you know, oil prices being lower than what they were a year ago. Is this impacting the pace of the backlog that you were initially expecting, just to get some visibility there? Thanks.
Sure, Juan. Hi, this is Alberto. Just to give you a little more explanation about our quarter margins in North America, and as I indicated, most of the effect had to do with changes in inventory. And as you know, when you reduce or increase inventory, there are different fixed cost allocations that take place, and some additional maintenance expenses that we did on the quarter. Normally, due to the lower production rates in the last part of the year, we take advantage of those low volumes to do maintenance. So these are pretty much, the two of them are mostly non-recurrent, so we don't expect most of that incremental cost to be recurrent ones. So they are pretty much extraordinary, and I think also 2014 was a little bit of a tough comparable because we had the opposite effect on the inventory side.
And this is Armando, and to answer your second part of the question related to structural components, what I can tell you is that in spite of the fact that, oil prices are significantly lower than everybody was expecting, and gasoline prices, mainly in the U.S., are extremely affordable or cheap, again, OEMs need to continue moving forward to meet the CO2 and fuel efficiency requirements imposed by government. Just to remind you, in the U.S., they need to achieve 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025, and in Europe they need to achieve 60 miles, or the equivalent of 95 grams per kilometer, by 2020. So we are seeing, based on those regulations, and they have not changed, that customers or OEMs need to improve the efficiency of the vehicles, and one significant lever that they have is to reduce the weight of the vehicles. We are seeing tremendous opportunity on the structural component business, as I was mentioning in the call. Yes, we are continuing getting new contracts, mainly with European OEMs, and certainly we are also in discussions with North American OEMs that also will need to meet the fuel requirements.
So just to understand your backlog breakdown regionally, so is it mainly Europe, that $200 million of backlog?
A significant portion. We have most of the contracts for European OEMs at this time. We have a single one for also a European, but that is going to be located in North America as we speak. However, as I indicated, we are in close negotiations and discussions with several North American-based OEMs.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it is star one if you'd like to ask a question. And the next question is from Luis Miranda of Santander. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Armando, I wanted to ask for your help just to try to understand a little bit the performance in EBITDA per head. We were seeing a strong volume growth. You mentioned value-added products, an increase in machining. And despite that, we see a marginal decline in EBITDA per head, which I would have expected to be at least stable year over year. How should we see this going forward, and what explains the contraction? Thanks.
Certainly, as you know, we have some type of seasonality, and we should not be just following, for instance, normally in this industry, 55% of the revenues come the first half of the year and 45 in the second part. Main reason for that is summer shutdown that some of our customers use to change product lines, as well as holidays that they have in the fall and, of course, in the winter time. And again, I think if you take a look at what we have been doing in terms of improving our EBITDA margin compared to previous years, I think we are moving in the right direction. And we're expecting, again, this year to continue with similar margins as we are getting last year.
Okay. Sorry, just to clarify, in terms of EBITDA per head, should we see 2016 on a similar level to 2015? Yes?
Yes, that is correct. If you do the math with the numbers that Armando shared, you're going to see EBITDA per unit very close to what we had in 15. I think it's important to mention as well that 15 had positive effects, such as the metal lag that we have been discussing, and that obviously is a non-recurring event. Depending on how materials move in the year, there may be some additional contribution to that, but we think that 15 is a fair number, which is even higher, slightly higher if you deduct the metal lag effect that we saw in 2015.
Thank you, Alberto.
Thank you. The next question is from Alberto Garcia of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. A quick question on the guidance. What assumption are you making for the exchange rate for the year?
Okay. The exchange rate that we are taking is the following. We are taking a peso or dollar at 18 pesos and also the euro at 107. This guidance is based on this assumption.
Okay, and what kind of sensitivity is there with regards to movements in FX?
Providing that we will not have any change on the euro, every single peso that the dollar is, or the peso is devaluated, I'm sorry, every single unit that the dollar improves in its strength, is equivalent to approximately 12 additional millions in EBITDA, providing that the euro doesn't move.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Eric McKee of Lazard. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Could you maybe just talk quickly about what you're seeing in terms of pricing, the pricing environment for the three geographies that you report? Also wondering about, you know, your EBITDA margin in the rest of the world, where do you think that could get to in the future? And then finally, just in terms of receivables, if I'm not mistaken, your receivable days came up quite a bit in the fourth quarter, and what you're expecting with that going forward.
Okay, this is Alberto. Let me first talk a little bit about the margins, your question on the margins.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way we see margins, rather than doing on a percentage of sales due to the effect of the aluminum, we're seeing it more on a per piece basis. So I think on an EBITDA per piece basis, what we're seeing in 15 of close to $15 per piece, that is a gradual increase from what we have seen in the past. And we're expecting that same level for 16 and gradually increasing going forward for the next years. And the reason for that is the introduction of more machining work, the improvement in mix of our products, and the incorporation of more structural components. Mm-hmm. The other side is on the working capital side. I'll have to check exactly how receivables came, but I would say that working capital has been relatively stable. But you also need to consider that when you look at the working capital during the year, you see a lot of seasonality. And normally on December, we see a reduction in activity and therefore a deep reduction in working capital, both on the receivable side and on the sales and on the payable side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just following on your question related to pricing, in the assumptions that we are presenting to you today, we have already certain price reduction already considered into this, and those most of them are already negotiated. But at the same time, we are always working internally in increasing our productivity to offset a significant portion of the price kickbacks that we provide to our customers.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Valentin Mendoza of Banorte. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My first question is, would you please break down the contribution of China in terms of volume sales so we can have a little visibility on the impact that the lower estimations on the Chinese productions for your customers will have on the rest of the world volumes and revenues?
Sure. This is Alberto. Well, the rest of the world is really comprised mainly of both China and Brazil. And I think a fair assumption at this point will be that China is about half of that.
Okay. Thank you very much. And in Russia, given the fall in the sales in that country?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question because you broke up initially?
Oh, I'm sorry. Would you please give us some color on the performance of your new plant in Russia, given the fall in the sales in that country?
Yep. As we indicated during the previous conference call, we officially inaugurated the plant last September. The plant certainly started with good performance in terms of quality, deliveries, productivity, and so on. Volumes in that region, as you would expect, are lower than originally anticipated. We are in discussions with our customer, which is the Volkswagen Group, and they are planning to export some of the engines produced in this plant to other facilities in Central Europe. Again, we have not received a firm indication from the customer what volume it is going to be. However, in this since we are just launching, we were not expecting a high volume for this year. So at this stage, the Russian facility is not presenting a significant impact to our bottom line.
Thank you very much, Armando. And one final question. if I may, is have you seen up to now any impact on your sales volume given the fall of Volkswagen production in Mexico of around 42% in January?
No, that's also a good question. I think it's important also to remind everyone that we have approximately 1% on the diesel engines supplied to Volkswagen. So that represents a small portion of our total revenues. We have not seen yet any impact on sales to the Volkswagen group. Not only the Volkswagen brand, but other brands such as Audi, Porsche, Skoda, Seat, and so on. So far, the answer is no effect in sales related to the diesel situation.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. The next question is from Jose Vasquez of GBM. Please go ahead.
Hi, Armando, Alberto, and Max. I have two quick questions. The first one is on the revenue side, the 3.4 decline that we saw on a yearly basis, which how much could be attributed to the decline in aluminum prices and the other to FX losses? And the second one would be, what are which is your outlook for aluminum prices for 2016? And maybe you have something for next year also would be really appreciated. Thank you.
Sure. On the exchange rate side, I mean, and this is a simple calculation, out of our revenue, close to 31% is euro-denominated. So out of the difference in revenue, we saw an effect of close to $300 million of exchange rate. And about $135 million associated with aluminum. The aluminum, as we said, we have a pass-through agreement, and the only effect we see on the aluminum side is on the metal lag, depending on how quick the aluminum prices move. For 2016, we're essentially assuming a flat aluminum price for our guidance. So we have no effects on that, and that's more or less at the level of close to $1,600 per ton. For aluminum ton.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank
you. Those were yearly figures.
Thank you. The next question is from Pablo Ricalde of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, my questions have been already answered.
Okay, thank you. And the next question is from Jean Bruni of BBVA. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for the call. Just have one quick question. It's on the contract you signed in 2015. There were $1.2 billion contracts you signed. If you just can break it down between the renewal, incremental, and then by businesses. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. As I indicated, approximately about 55% of the $1.2 billion is replacement business. The other 45% is new business, and I think it's a mix of additional cylinder heads, engine blocks, as well as structural components that we see in these additional approximately $550 million in additional revenue.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Anmario Ramirez of Signum. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My first question is about what do you think is going to be your market share in structural components, your initial market share, and what is going to be your target in this segment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? We didn't hear it well.
Yeah, sorry. Which going to be your market share in structural components?
Well, this is a new industry. The total industry size is estimated to be at approximately
$1 billion today. And with the $200 million, we're expecting to have approximately 20% of the industry. However, we are developing a strategy to continue growing, and hopefully, again, the industry is expected to grow to approximately about 3 to 4 billion by the end of the decade, and about 15 billion estimated to be by 2030. And certainly we would like to have a good and solid market share. I think we have already demonstrated, in spite of the fact that we started this new product line 18 months ago, we have been able to capture significant orders. And certainly I need to tell you that we have, in some cases, declined to quote or even take additional orders because we want to launch all the products successfully. And I think we are putting, as I indicated in my comments during the call, that we are building a new product development center in Poland, as well as strengthening our team in Europe, as well as in North America, to be prepared to capture additional market share in the structural component business.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. My second question is regarding the new contract you got, the annual $1,200. When do you expect to recognize the revenues? And, I mean, how much of this amount are you going to earn this year? And when will you start earning the total amount?
The average development time for a new product takes between 18 to 24 months. So, and not all the products come with the maximum volume on first day. And they go gradually, takes approximately, especially for powertrains, 2 to 3 years to reach maximum volume. So, again, on the contracts that we received last year, we're expecting to start the investments this year and, again, start production on the 17 and 18 and reach full volume by 19.
Okay, thank you. I just have a last question. Now that Ford is planning to double its production in Mexico, what do you think will be your participation in this new production?
As one of the main suppliers in North America, not only in Mexico, and there is a lot of new companies that are investing in Mexico, taking advantage of, again, the competitive labor cost and other competitive advantages that the country presents. And certainly we have captured already some important contracts with different customers. For instance, we will be the supplier for Audi, the new Q5 that will be launched in Puebla. As we speak, we are developing some products. We are as well developing products for Kia, who is almost ready to start the launching of their new plant here in the state of Nuevo León, as well as Ford, their expansion in Chihuahua. We were able to secure a very nice and important contract. And also we are talking and again, developing some products for Daimler and Nissan for their Aguascalientes and also some of the plants that they have in the U.S. And we're working with other potential customers that are investing in North America and not only in Mexico.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to turn the conference back over to Maximilian Zimmerman for any closing comments.
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a great day.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.